Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to this segment of Ask a Lawyer, a production of the Institute for Native Arts and Media. This half hour is sponsored by Oklahoma Indian Legal Services, serving Indian country in Oklahoma for 40 years. Today, we have with us Brian Candelaria. Of course, he's back in the hot seat. How are you, Brian?
Doing great. Doing great.
Let's talk today about insurance and how insurance, life insurance, even accidental death insurance, how does that factor into probates and wills and things like that?
Well, especially with like life insurance and stuff, what's called term life insurance, it's set for if an event happens in for life insurance, if someone passes away, then that money kind of like a savings account stuff, can if you paid it up, as per the terms of a contract, then it will go to your beneficiaries. It was designed for working class families to be able to make sure that if the breadwinner, usually is a male at that time when these were, instituted originally, was if the person who's mainly making the money, if they pass away, what's going to happen to their family? And so that's what life insurance is, was about. And then other types of insurance follow if you get, hurt and you've paid into it. There's an employment, type of insurance where if you get hurt or accidentally disabled in some way, then that will pay your family. That way it's not, you don't lose what you've got. Your family can continue on, is the idea. Over the years, though, it's been more difficult for working class, those who are economically challenged. It's become more difficult, and so that what used to be a bit of a safety net that was available to a lot of folks is no longer there.
Yeah, and with the cost of everything yeah. rising,
yeah,
I just it's really kind of beyond me how insurance goes up so much. It's like, hey, yeah. this is just in case something happens,
right.
But I guess the increase in it, like homeowners insurance, if you have something happens to your house. The lumber and the building materials have skyrocketed the past few years. So
they have. And one of the added benefits of that type of insurance was the fact and is the fact that it's contractual. You set up who your beneficiary is going to be in a contract. But as a result, you don't have to go through probate. It's handled like a lot of your banks and credit unions. When you do an account, you open especially a savings account. You can name you sign a contract and name who the beneficiary is, and that that does not necessarily need to go through the probate process. It can instead, by contract, be passed down and transferred to someone else, your beneficiaries. So that was an added benefit. And again, to a large degree, people don't know about it as much. And it's, economically been priced out of a lot of people's, means.
That's really a great point, is being priced outside of people's means, because for lower income families, that means that their insurance companies basically don't have to deal with you if you can't afford them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, especially for, groups that are marginalized, and it's, you know, the double whammy for our enrolled, our enrolled tribal citizen in their communities and stuff is that not only are they marginalized as far as the fact that they're, you know, non-white and stuff like that, it's the fact that they're often in rural communities and resources are already scarce. You know, that lumber cost that you're talking about, the replacing the windows and stuff, when you've only got one or two, hardware places in your community, when you only have one or two, gas stations, everything goes up even more.
That's a great point too. And, you know, especially dealing with rural Southwestern Oklahoma, where I'm from, and, you know, still trying to do a lot of work out there and still doing a lot of outreach out there. It really does. Another thing to disproportionately affect our Native families out in these rural communities, and it's not just Oklahoma.
Right.
When you break it down and look across the country, our tribal communities are rural communities for a reason.
Yeah.
That is by design.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when we talk about these things, what's the best way for Native families to try to estate plan, to try to really kind of, like, how do you begin to plan for retirement when you can barely, the holidays are here and you're running the gauntlet and barely surviving to make it to January. How do we begin?
It's not easy, but I think the first step, really when you get down to it, the first step is to talk about it. A lot of communities, especially, as I'm growing up and stuff, my dad was a construction worker. My mom stayed home with us kids and stuff. We really didn't talk about money. It never came up and things were going to be okay and stuff like that. And so the first step really, whether it's estate planning or dealing with any, financial issue and stuff, is to talk to people, to talk amongst, yourself as a family, and then also seek advice. There are a lot of great resources out there. It's by talking to folks, you can maybe find, listening to podcasts that you trust and folks and information that you trust. That first step of just talking about it and kind of demystifying it. And then, because in a lot of places, especially rural communities and stuff, it's like, it's the family business. It's no one else needs to know, and for the parents, the kids don't need to know. So it's that self-reliance, but that self-reliance can be a double-edged sword in that when the difficult things happen, you're sometimes feel like you're by yourself. And as we know in our Native communities, and that's not the case. We pull together. And if you know someone needs help, if you know someone is not feeling well, you bring them a casserole.
Something, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, like a dessert maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Feel
exactly.
Better. Some comfort food of some sort.
Yeah, yeah. And people think, people forget that they would be doing the same thing for others, and folks help each other. And it's just getting, talking and conversation and getting that part done. And then, based on, what works for your family and what works for you is kind of what the next step will be.
I mean, there are a lot of great points in there, especially the part about it's nobody else's business but your family's. And even to some at some point, those decision making process to me still doesn't include kids. But that's a reflection of the house that I grew up in.
Right.
Didn't talk to us about that. And in school, we had home ec.
Right.
You learn how to go and buy groceries on a budget, but you don't know what to do beyond that budget.
Right.
You don't know how you get to that budget. You don't know how to, you're not taught any of any kind of credit or banking or anything else like that. Overdraft fees, like none of that is taught in our schools. So when Gen Xers like me, get to college, they've like basically been told, okay, all this money, it's grown folks' business. Well, now you're a grown up and here's a giant lump sum of money from your tribe. Go forth.
And
it's wasted.
Yeah.
90% of the time.
Or, you know, even, you know, more universally, you know, and they're, you know, even trying to do it in high schools, I imagine, and stuff, the credit cards, you know, they set themselves up a little booth, they give out free t-shirts, you just sign up, but, you know, especially, you know, first day of college or first day of community college or whatever it is, they set it up, you sign, and you're, you know, free money.
But it's your credit shot for the next 30 years.
That's right. And
but they got that t-shirt.
That's right. They got the t-shirt. And, you know, when you're talking about, you know, from my experiences as doing wills and setting up wills and transferring death deeds and all that estate planning and stuff, what I've noticed is that the, you know, 70-year-old, 80-year-old mom still has trouble talking about finances and stuff like that to the 50-year-old, 60-year-old son and daughter who could be useful. You know, they could use to have those conversations, but the, you know, it's you always see your children as your children, and as far as they're still the little kid, but, you know, we're talking about, you know, 50, 60 year olds now that are sandwiched in between, you know, us as Gen Xers. We've got that sandwich where, you know, we've got the kids that we're taking care of, or the grandkids, and then we've got the parents that we're trying to take care of and juggle. And all of that is so much more difficult when you're not talking, when you're not talking about these subjects, when you're not bringing these subjects up. And that's why, podcasts, that's why things like, you know, our conversations today could be good conversation starters, just to get, you know, just to talk about these important issues for each family.
Do you, and as you've gone through Indian country and as you've done these things, I'm sure you've witnessed firsthand the baby boomers and I don't know what's the greatest generation called? They're not the baby boomers. They're the ones before that. My grandma's generation, the ones that were, you know, born in the Depression and, you know, kind of have a very, very different take on all of that. And I totally get what you mean. I mean, it's one thing for that generation to talk to their children about that and even be comfortable with that. But it's quite another thing if they have to depend on their grandchildren to do that. I mean, that is a whole other kind. It presents its own other kind of issues. I mean, you say, you know, they're always going to be the kid. Well, that you're always going to be the grandkid too. And I don't know that you ever really grow out of it, except to say they just kind of resign themselves, like, okay, I'm just fine.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of on both sides. It's like, you know, this is what, you know, it will be and stuff. But a lot of the tribes have great resources as far, especially for the elders of the tribes. And so in, you know, they're willing to help as much as they can. And but each family, and then you've got family dynamics tossed in there that could go either way. So it's amazing.
Well, but those are kind of the decisions that you have to make. You have to make those decisions of, okay, if we have these four kids, yeah, who, you know, if we're advanced in age and we've got these four kids, who do we think needs to X, Y, and Z? It may not even be kids, right? It may be somebody else.
Right. Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
And Indian families, like, okay, so Indian families are like that too. Like, Indian families will not, like, they Indians don't share easily anyway.
Right.
But especially with those kinds of things, I mean, sometimes, and I'm sure you've seen it, where somebody passes away and they have a will in place and everybody's shocked.
Yeah. 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 We, you know, have seen that. And, you know, again, because, you know, folks don't necessarily talk to each other, you know, as far as that goes about stuff like that, you know, so it's interesting. And, I guess one of the things that I, you know, point out is that it's important to talk about those things, especially when you're dealing with trust land, real property, trust property, or restricted property, and having those conversations are important, because it's not about necessarily about the land. It's about the fact that it's tied to the family. It's your heritage. It's that's your land. And to make sure it goes to someone who appreciates it. We all have those family members, I'm sure, that, when things are difficult, they're not there. But when, you know, when someone is offering to give something for free or something like that, they're the first ones through the door. And that's with every family. That's, you know, and we all know who the family members are with a good head on their shoulders. And so.
Well, and being able to, and talking about those kinds of decisions, like, I mean, that's a lot to ask.
It is.
For Indian families to say, okay, we're all going to sit down here and this person is going to do this and this person is going to do that. And just, you know, I've seen how ugly these things can get within the family and made up wills. And this is, of course, back before when it was a real free for all.
Yeah.
At the BIA, like back in the early 80s.
Yeah.
When I was a child and could hear the different things that were going on.
Yeah.
But as an adult, looking back on some of the things that were going on, and when you gotta, people need to realize that the agency, I mean, they were just 10, 12 years reorganized at that point.
Yeah.
And I mean, I shudder to think with those early years at the reconstituted agencies were like,
right? Yeah Well, and during that chaos and stuff, you've got the, you know, kind of the chaos that allowed, you know, where, you know, folks had to step up and retake their and hold the government accountable. They had to, you know the chaos that was going on in the BIA and stuff like that allowed the, you know, allowed for the taking that, you know, that Cobell addressed, you know, that the Cobell lawsuit, you know, a mismanagement and, you know, that need, you know, that case came about because, you know, during that chaos, people were taking things they shouldn't have and that wasn't theirs. And, you know, whether it's the government or individuals or whatever and stuff, you just can't do that. And so, not when you're entrusted to take care of what you're supposed to take care of. So yeah. And, you know, when not only are, when we're talking about like finances and stuff, but one of the most important conversations that needs to occur in any family and stuff is what to do when someone gets ill, when the elder gets ill and you have, you know, the siblings or the grandparents, or a lot of times it's the nieces and the nephews taking care of the aunties and the uncles. And it's, you know, what do we do when she gets sick, when he gets sick and has to make those decisions? You know, that's the sort of thing we can help with as far as oils, as far as, you know, advanced directives, powers of attorneys, and that sort of thing. But first, you need those conversations within the family as to the what ifs.
And, you know, speaking from experience, it's a tough place to be as a child. Mm-hmm. If none of that stuff is in place and an emergency happens, a medical emergency happens, and it's like you're just in that moment. There's a lot of people coming at you saying all kinds of different things and sticking papers in your face to sign. And it's just like, wait, I don't know what now. And just the whole, does he have an advanced directive? Does he, you know, and it's just like, I don't know. I don't know any of these things, you know, and just having to kind of say, okay, everybody, I just leave me with the paperwork and let me look through everything and let me see what all of this is. Because in an emergency, some things you have to sign right then.
Right.
You know, some things you can't know that you're going to have to sign those things. It's just, hey, we have to do this now. And here you go. Right. And so I mean, it would be nice if we could, if the Institute for Native Arts and Media and Oils could work together to do some preparatory classes that way. If you find yourself in this emergency, where are the papers?
Right.
Where did you put these papers?
And it's, you know, not even, you know, when we're talking about the importance of papers and stuff, you know, so it's not necessarily like the importance of the financial papers and stuff. It's what medicines are you taking? What medicines, you know, because what's one of the first things doctor asks, you know, what medicines are you taking? Because they don't want to give the wrong information. Heck did I know, you know, and, you know, but important conversations like that can help, you know, that's all, like you said, disaster preparedness. It's all about, you know, it's all about preparing. It's, you know, having the conversations, making sure everyone knows who needs to know where to find the information to give to others, whether it's the tribe, whether it's to give to FEMA, whether it's to give to doctors. You know, there are a lot of steps that we can make during, you know, what disaster in disaster circles and stuff they call blue sky. Well, there's a lot of steps that you can take during blue sky times before a disaster occurs.
Yes, indeed. And that's the time to do it. And you know what? Hey, Thanksgiving, it's Thanksgiving time and everybody's with their families now.
That's true.
Time like the present. You're going to be fighting anyway. Yeah. You're going to be arguing around anyway. Exactly. So may as well put the important stuff out there.
That's right. Yeah. Because everybody kind of needs to be on the same page, as we've all had families and stuff where, you know, you've got the one person that is always argumentative, very, you know, confrontational and stuff. And unless everyone is kind of on the same page, then those voices can confuse things. And right when you need to be the most together, the most unified.
You know, that's a really interesting point, because when you lose those matriarchs and those patriarchs and those elders that held your family together, you're absolutely right. And for better or worse, those voices, those dynamics, those family dynamics that have always kind of been underlying are now fully at the surface. And it's a whole new ball game, and it's the bully pulpit usually wins.
Yeah. And you know, there are some people who do a fantastic job, especially elders. They have the wisdom to do a fantastic job to kind of make sure that everyone gets along. And then when that person is ill or not there anymore, there's chaos.
You don't have to tell me, sir. I've lived it. I understand that. But you know, when especially during these holidays, that's also a good time to talk about disaster preparedness just in general. What are we going to do if this house sets on fire?
Right.
what are we going to do as a family if this happens? And so it's a good day for food. It's a good day for football. Maybe talk about it as everybody's drifting off into their tryptophan comas. Like, hey, we should talk about this over our next round of pumpkin pie.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So
Brian, let us know where is Oils going to be? Are y'all going to wait until the new year, or do y'all have a couple of events until January? Because I wasn't sure if y'all took December off, or because y'all have a lot going on.
Well, starting kind of in mid-December, because we've got to, you know, kind of do our books, make sure everything is set up for the calendar year as far as the cases are closed that need to be closed, and just make sure that all the notes are taken care of. So what that means is that we kind of like to sprint towards that end. And so next week we've got three clinics. We've got a clinic in Seminole, and what I'll do, if it'll help, I'll go ahead and send you the flyers.
Okay.
And that way you can distribute it for your viewers when you can. But Seminole on the 29th, that's a Tuesday, we're going to be over at the Realty office, and then we're going to go on the 30th to Lawton, and we're going the Kiowa Council over there in Lawton have graciously offered to host us for the day. And then we've got our monthly meeting. It would have been tomorrow for the Wichita over in Anadarko, but they asked us to go ahead and move it to the Friday after Thanksgiving, which is December 2nd. And then I'm hoping to do we're hoping to do one like in the El Reno area, and then jaunt down to Ida Bell before mid December, so that we can continue to help with those that were affected by the tornado that came through a couple of weeks ago. Again, the holiday season, very rough on those folks who have gone through a disaster. And we just want to make sure that if they need any legal help and stuff, that we'll go down. And the dates on those two events, El Reno and Ida Bell and stuff, I'll be sure and give you when we set those dates.
Yeah, please do. And isn't that the craziest thing? Okay, so just real quick, our weather patterns have shifted.
Big
like
time.
Tornado season is now in October.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's been that way for the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. It's and then, you know, two, 3 days later, you're worrying about an ice storm. So, you know, it's again, these opportunities where we can have these conversations during, you know, the slim number of blue sky days that we've got per year, because we all know that come spring, it's nothing but worry about those tornadoes, about those storm systems. So I really appreciate the opportunity to talk today to get some of those conversations started and really utilize this time when we're together. Thankfully, you know, with COVID, COVID kind of not as rough as it has been in the past couple of years, we can actually be together and enjoy the holidays together with each other.
Yes, indeed. Well, Brian, you enjoy your turkey day, and I'm telling you, ease into that trip to Fancoma. We're all going to do it. I can't wait. But
I'm a sucker for the stuffing, so.
just have a plate, the whole plate until the thing's gone.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Brian, and have a great holiday. We'll talk to you very soon, and I'm sure we'll probably see you around the way at one of these oil outreach. And please do send those flyers so we can give that to our podcast subscribers and listeners. Thanks so much, everyone, for tuning into this segment of Ask a Lawyer. For more information about Oklahoma Indian Legal Services or to donate, you can visit the OILS website at oilsonline.org. This has been a production of the Institute for Native Arts and Media. Thank you so much for your support. Have a great day and have a great holiday.